Baker Street West presents, for your listening pleasure, The Speckled Band by Arthur Conan Doyle, adapted by Connor Broderick and performed by the Baker Street Players. Before our adventure begins, a word from our sponsor.
Mrs. Hudson's Tea Shop is a testament to Mrs. Hudson's talent with tea. She has procured an impressive variety of quality teas from around the world, convenient tea accessories, and beautiful vintage china for sale to the most discerning clientele, all the while tending to the very worst tenant in London. Mrs. Hudson never complains about Mr. Holmes's music at strange hours, his occasional revolver practice within doors, his weird and malodorous scientific experiments, and the obnoxious characters who invade her ground floor flat. Mrs. Hudson's Tea Shop should be your first stop at Baker Street West, a Victorian London neighborhood straight from the tales of Sherlock Holmes, located in historic Jackson, California. And sometimes she has delicious samples to offer. Open weekends at Baker Street West, where the game is always afoot.
In glancing over the cases in which I have studied my dear friend, Mr. Sherlock Holmes, I find many tragic, some comic, and a large number merely strange. He refused to associate himself with any investigation which did not tend toward the unusual. Of all these cases, however, I cannot recall any which presented more utterly singular features than that associated with the well-known Surrey family of the Roylotts of Stoke Moran. Our tale begins early in April, when I woke one morning to find Sherlock Holmes standing, fully dressed, by the side of my bed.
Very sorry to wake you, Watson, but it's the common lot this morning. Mrs. Hudson was. She woke upon me, and I you.
What is it, then? A fire?
No, a client. A young lady who insists upon seeing me has arrived in a considerable state of excitement. She is waiting now in the sitting room. Now, when young ladies wander about London at this hour of the morning and knock sleepy people out of their beds, I presume that it is something very pressing which they have to communicate. Should it prove to be an interesting case, I thought that I should call you and give you the chance to follow it from the outset.
My dear fellow, I would not miss it for anything.
That must be her now. Good morning, miss. My name is Sherlock Holmes. This is my friend and associate, Dr. Watson, before whom you can speak as freely as before myself. I am glad to see that Mrs. Hudson had the good sense to light the fire, for I observe that you shiver.
It is not cold which makes me shiver.
What, then?
Fear, Mr. Holmes. It is terror.
We shall soon set matters right, I have no doubt. You've come in by train this morning, I see.
You know me, then?
No. But I observe the second half of a return ticket in the palm of your left glove. You must have started early, and yet you had a good drive in a dog cart before you reached the station. The left arm of your jacket is spattered with mud in no less than 7 places. There is no vehicle save a dog cart which throws up mud in that way, and then only when you sit on the left-hand side of the driver.
You are perfectly correct. I started from home before 6 and came in by the first train to Waterloo. Sir, I can stand this strain no longer. I shall go mad if it continues. I have no one to turn to in this matter, none. I have heard of you, Mr. Holmes, from Mrs. Farintosh, whom you helped. Oh, sir, do you not think that you could help me to throw a little light through the darkness which surrounds me?
Therintosh. Yes, I recall the case. Before your time, Watson. I shall be happy to devote the same care to your case as that of your friend. I beg that you will lay before us everything that may help us in forming an opinion on the matter.
The very horror of my situation lies in the fact that my fears are so vague, and my suspicions depend so entirely upon small points that even my beloved fiancé looks upon all as the fancies of a nervous woman. He does not say so, but I can read it from his soothing answers and averted eyes. But I have heard, Mr. Holmes, that you can see deeply into the manifold wickedness of the human heart. You may advise me how to walk amid the dangers which encompass me.
I am all attention.
My name is Helen Stoner, and I am living with my stepfather, who is the last survivor of one of the oldest Saxon families in England, the Roylotts of Stoke Moran.
The name is familiar.
The family was once among the richest in England. After decades of precarious finance, the family ruin was completed by a gambler in the days of the Regency, leaving nothing. His only son, my stepfather, obtained an advance to take a medical degree and went to Calcutta, where he established a large practice. In a fit of anger, however, he beat his butler to death. He suffered a long term of imprisonment, narrowly escaping a capital sentence, and returned to England a disappointed man. When Dr. Roylott was in India, he married my mother, Mrs. Stoner. My sister Julie and I were twins, and we were only 2 years old at the time of...
The murder?
His accident. My mother has a considerable sum of money, not less than 1,000 a year, bequeathed to Dr. Roylott entirely while we resided with him, with a provision that an annual sum should be allowed to each of us in the event of our marriage. Shortly after our return to England, my mother died in a railway accident near Crewe.
I am sorry to hear that, Miss Stoner.
You are kind, Dr. Watson. It has been a long time.
Yes, our condolences. What occurred after the death of your mother, Miss Stoner?
After she died, Dr. Roylott abandoned his attempts to practice in London. With the money my mother left, there seemed to be no obstacle to our happiness at the ancestral home in Stoke Moran. But a terrible change came over our stepfather. Instead of making friends with the neighbors, he shut himself up and seldom came out save to quarrel, becoming the terror of the village. He is a man of immense strength and absolutely uncontrollable in his anger. Last week, he hurled the local blacksmith over a parapet into a stream.
Good Lord! A blacksmith? Bodily over a parapet?
Oh, do shush, Watson. You were saying, Miss Stoner.
Oh, I do not begrudge Dr. Watson the shock. My stepfather is an imposing man. It took more money than I would like to admit to keep it quiet. He has no friends at all, save wandering travelers whom he gives leave to encamp upon the family estate. He has a passion also for Indian animals, and has, at this moment, a cheetah and a baboon, which wander freely over his grounds, and are greatly feared by the villagers. You can imagine from what I say that my sister Julia... pardon me. We have had no great pleasure in our lives. Not even a servant would stay with us. And Julia, she was but 30 at the time of her death.
Your sister is dead, then?
These 2 years past. It is of her death that I wish to speak to you. You can understand that we were unlikely to see anyone of our own age and position. We had, however, an aunt who lives near Harrow, and we were occasionally allowed short visits at her house. Julia went there at Christmas 2 years ago and met a sergeant to whom she became engaged. When my stepfather learned of it, he offered no objection. But within a fortnight of the wedding day, the terrible event which has deprived me of her occurred.
Pray, be precise with the details.
Every event is seared into my memory. The manor house is very old, but only one wing is now inhabited. The bedrooms in it are on the ground floor. Of these bedrooms, the first is Dr. Roylott's, the second was my sister's, and the third my own. There is no communication between them, but they all open into the same corridor. Do I make myself plain?
Perfectly so.
The windows of the three rooms open upon the lawn. That fateful night, Dr. Roylott had gone to his room early, and my sister was troubled by the smell of the Indian cigars which he was smoking. She left her room, therefore, and came into mine, where she sat for some time, chatting about her wedding. At 11 o'clock, she rose to leave me. But she paused at the door and looked back.
Tell me, Helen, have you ever heard anyone whistle in the dead of the night?
Never. I suppose that you could not be possibly whistle in your sleep?
Certainly not.
But why?
Because during the last few nights, about 3 in the morning, I have heard a low, clear whistle. I cannot tell where it came from. Perhaps the next room, perhaps the wrong? I thought I would just ask you whether you had heard it.
No, I have not. It must be the travellers.
Very likely. And yet if it were on the lawn, I wondered that you did not hear it also.
Ah, but I sleep more heavily than you.
Well, it is of no great consequence at any rate. Good night, Helen.
Indeed. Was it your custom always to lock yourselves in at night?
I believe I mentioned to you that the doctor kept a cheetah and a baboon free to roam as they pleased.
Quite so. Pray, proceed.
I could not sleep that night, overcome by a feeling of impending misfortune. My sister and I were twins. It was a wild night. The wind was howling outside, and the rain beating and splashing against the window, when suddenly... Julia! Julia! I sprang from bed, wrapped a shawl round me, and rushed into the corridor. As I opened my door, I heard a low whistle. As my sister had described, and a few moments later, a clanging sound as if a mass of metal had fallen. As I ran down the passage, my sister's door was unlocked. It swung slowly open. Julia! Julia, oh God! Julia, are you all right?
Who is it? Oh, my heart! Helen! Oh God, Helen! It was the band! The speckled band! The room!
Julia! Julia, speak to me! Oh no! Dr. Roylott, quickly! Her knees gave way, and she fell to the ground. She writhed in terrible pain, and her limbs were dreadfully convulsed. I rushed out, calling for my stepfather, and I met him coming from his room in his dressing gown.
What are you screaming about, girl? Do you not know I have an appointment in the city tomorrow?
Oh, doctor, quickly, Julia's ill! Oh, God!
Stop your dithering and hold your sister still. Quickly, do not test me.
When he reached my sister's side, she was unconscious. Though he poured brandy down her throat and sent for medical aid from the village, all her efforts were in vain. She sank and died without even recovering consciousness. Such was the dreadful end of my beloved sister.
One moment. Are you sure about this whistle and metallic sound? Could you swear to it?
It is my strong impression that I heard it, though among the gale and the creaking of an old house, I may possibly have been deceived.
Was your sister dressed?
No, she was in her night clothes. In her right hand was found the charred stump of a match. In her left, a matchbox.
showing that she had struck a light and looked about the room. That is important. And what conclusions did the coroner come to?
He investigated the case with great care, but he was unable to find any satisfactory cause of death. The door had been fastened upon the inner side, the windows blocked by old-fashioned shutters with broad iron bars, the walls were shown to be solid all round, and the flooring was also thoroughly examined to no avail. It is certain that my sister was alone when she met her end. Besides, there were no marks of any violence upon her.
Poison, then?
The doctors examined her for it without success.
What do you think that your dear sister died of, then?
It is my belief that she died of pure fear and nervous shock, though what frightened her I cannot imagine.
Were there travelers on the grounds at the time?
Yes, there are nearly always some there.
Ah, and what did you gather from this allusion to a band, a speckled band?
Sometimes I've thought that it was merely delirium. Sometimes that it may have referred to some band of people, perhaps the travelers. Perhaps the spotted handkerchief some I have seen wear might have suggested it.
Perhaps. These are very deep waters. Pray go on.
2 years have passed since then, and my life had been lonelier than ever. A month ago, however, a dear, dear friend has done me the honor to ask my hand in marriage. My stepfather has offered no opposition to the match, and we are to be married in the course of the spring.
Why, congratulations! A sorely needed bit of good news in a trying time.
I but wish I could feel it so, Dr. Watson. 2 days ago, some repairs were started in the west wing of the building, so that I have had to move into my sister's chamber, to sleep in her bed. Imagine, then, my thrill of terror when last night, as I lay awake, thinking over her fate, I heard that same low whistle. I sprang up and lit the lamp, but nothing was to be seen. I was too shaken to go to bed again, and as soon as it was daylight, I came this morning to ask your advice.
You have done wisely, but have you told me everything?
Yes, all.
Miss Stoner, you have not. You are screening your stepfather.
Why, what do you mean?
Your wrist, Miss Stoner. You have tugged down your sleeve 4 times since arriving, but not enough to hide that there are 5 small bruises which could only have been made by the grip of fingers. You have been cruelly used.
He is a hard man. Perhaps he hardly knows his own strength.
This is a very deep business indeed, and we have not a moment to lose. Miss Stoner, were we to come to Stoke Moran today, would it be possible for us to see these rooms without the knowledge of your stepfather?
As it happens, he spoke of coming into town today upon some business until the morrow. It is likely there would be nothing to disturb you.
Excellent. You are not adverse to this trip, Watson?
By no means.
Then, Miss Stoner, you may expect us early in the afternoon. I myself have some small business matters to attend to. Will you not wait and breakfast?
No, I must go. My heart is lightened already. I shall look forward to seeing you again this afternoon.
Good day, Miss Stoner. And what do you think of it all, Watson?
It seems to me to be a most dark and sinister business.
Dark and sinister enough.
Yet, if the lady is correct that in saying that the flooring and walls are sound, and the door, window, and chimney are impassable, her sister must have been alone when she met her end.
What becomes then of these nocturnal whistles, the peculiar words of the dying woman?
I cannot think.
When you combine the whistles at night, the band of travelers who are on intimate terms with the doctor, the fact that we have every reason to believe that he has an interest in preventing his stepdaughter's marriage, the allusion to a band, and finally, the fact that Miss Helen Stoner heard a metallic clang, which might have been caused by one of those metal bars that secured the shutters falling back into its place, I think that there's good ground to think that the mystery may be cleared along those lines.
But what, then, did the travelers do?
I cannot imagine.
I see many objections to any such theory.
And so do I. It is precisely for that reason that we are going to Stoke Moran this day. I want to see whether the objections are fatal or if they may be explained away.
Now, sir, Mr. Holmes and the doctor are occupied. They may be available on the morrow, sir.
Out of my way, woman.
Sir, the gentlemen are indisposed. I implore you to come back tomorrow.
But what in the name of the devil? Who is this man, Mrs. Hudson?
If I only knew. With these droves bustling in and out at all hours of the morning. Really, Mr. Holmes, a flat is not a boarding house.
Which of you is Holmes?
My name, sir. But you have the advantage of me.
I am Dr. Grimsby Roylott of Stoke Moran.
Indeed, doctor. Pray, take a seat.
I will do nothing of the kind. I have traced my stepdaughter here. What has she been saying to you?
It is a little cold for the time of year.
What has she been saying to you?
But I believe I heard that the crocuses promise well.
You put me off, do you? I know you, scoundrel. I have heard you before. You are Holmes, the meddler. Holmes, the busybody.
Your conversation is most entertaining. When you go out, pray close the door. There is a decided draught.
I will go when I have said my say. Don't you dare to meddle with my affairs. I know Miss Stoner has been here. I traced her. I am a dangerous man to fall foul of. See here.
What are you doing with our fire poker, doctor?
What I would do to your neck.
My poker! That was my mother's, you rascal.
I'll see that you keep yourself out of my grip, Holmes.
He seems a very amiable person. I am not quite so bulky, but if he had remained, I might have shown him that my grip was not much more feeble than his own. A shame. It was a lovely poker. I'm terribly sorry, Mrs. Hudson. Twice bent is better than broken, however.
Oh, what an awful man, Mr. Holmes. I tried to keep him out, but what a lack of manners.
Truly. This incident certainly gives zest to our investigation. I hope Helen will not suffer from his tracing her. And now, Watson, Mrs. Hudson, we shall breakfast. And afterwards, I shall walk to Doctor's Commons, where I hope to get some data, which may help us in this matter.
To admirers of Sherlock Holmes and Sir Arthur Conan Doyle, the Deerstalker at Baker Street West will evoke your last trek through the Devonshire Moor and tantalize you with a considerable Sherlockian inventory on offer there. Wonderful books, old and new, handmade keepsakes of the most unusual origins, vintage prints, and collectibles suitable for any lover of Sherlock Holmes all await you in the Deerstalker. You need not have concerns about your safety. For some time now, all hounds have been banished from the premises. Plan your visit soon to the Deerstalker at Baker Street West, a Victorian London neighborhood straight from the tales of Sherlock Holmes, located in historic Jackson, California. Open weekends at Baker Street West, where the game is always afoot.
And that, my friends, is how the case I would come to christen The adventure of the Speckled Band began. With a terrified young woman, her brute of a stepfather, Mrs. Hudson's poker was never the same again, I must say, and Holmes off to investigate. I confess I had an uneasy time of breakfast in anticipation of our journey to Stoke Moran, until Holmes arrived back at 221B.
Ah, Watson. You are ready, I hope. I have seen the will of the deceased wife. The total income bequeathed is not more than £750, and each daughter can claim an income of £250 in case of marriage. It is evident, therefore, that if both girls had married, this beauty would have had a mere pittance, while even one of them would cripple Dr. Roylott seriously. He has the strongest motives for standing in the way of anything of this sort. This is too serious for dawdling, Watson. Especially as the old man is aware that we are interesting ourselves in his affairs. I should be very much obliged if you would bring your service revolver. It would be an excellent argument with gentlemen who can twist steel pokers into knots. Off to the station, shall we?
Right you are, Holmes. Shall we get a cab, Holmes? It is but 5 miles from Stoke Moran.
Absolutely, my dear fellow. And what a lovely spring day for a ride through the countryside. What ho, fellow?
Where to, Governor?
Stoke Moran. The house of one Dr. Roylott.
Is you sure? That mad old bugger threw me dead off a parapet last month. Oh, I'd stay away from him if I was you.
I assure you, sir, we know our business. In fact, we are here in order to...
To survey the property for purchase. What with the repairs and the family's dire straits, our company believes it could be a fine investment.
Is that so? Oh, well, I'd wish you luck in that bet, crazy Dr. Roylott. Ain't likely to give up his home too easy. He's got a cheetah living. I seen it once. The teeth on it. And with all them travelers, it's a circus of characters, it is.
Travelers? What can you tell me about them? We were never informed of any others living on the property.
Yes, sir. They lives there half the year round. In them caravans. My dad and I fixed up an axle for one of the carriages just last week. Half of them was wearing these funny, spoggy handkerchiefs round their necks. Strange folk, but fair. Oh, well, here we are, the fine Roylott estate.
Rather dilapidated, if you ask me. Half the roof is sagging. I can see why Dr. Roylott would be trying to...
To sell the estate, of course, Watson. Thank you for taking us, my good man.
No trouble at all. I pass on my way to get milk in the evening, so if you need to get to the village down yonder, wait here at sundown. You'll find it sort of up to the house to get over this stile by the footpath over the fields. There is... where the lady is walking.
And the lady, I fancy, is Miss Stoner. Yes. I think we had better do as you suggest. Thank you.
Cheerio, gents. Look, an elf.
I must say, Holmes, I do not understand why we deceived that man. He seemed perfectly pleasant.
And perhaps too familiar with the property, do you not think? And what of his mention of the handkerchiefs of the travelers? No, Watson, this business must be held close until we find its sordid bottom.
If you say, Holmes. I must say I never liked lying. It gives me indigestion.
If that is so, perhaps I have a dishonest guts, my good doctor. Be glad you're not an actor. Ah, good afternoon, Miss Stoner. You see that we have been as good as our word.
I have been waiting eagerly for you. Dr. Roylott has gone to town, and with luck, he will not be back before evening.
In fact, we've had the pleasure of making the doctor's acquaintance already.
Yes, he barged into the apartment minutes after you took your leave, Miss Stoner, asking after your person.
And ruined Mrs. Hudson's best fire poker in the process.
Good heavens! He followed me then!
So it appears.
He is so cunning, I never know when I am safe from him. Oh, what will he say when he returns?
He must guard himself, for he may find that there is someone far more cunning upon his track. Lock yourself up from him tonight. If he is violent, we shall take you away to your aunt's. Now, we must make the best use of our time. Kindly take us to the rooms.
Of course, Mr. Holmes.
After we had met Miss Stoner, we progressed to the house. It had this strange, ramshackle air of a home nearly succumbed to dilapidation. The building was of gray, lichen-blotted stone, with a high central portion and two curving wings thrown out on each side. Some scaffolding had been erected against the end wall, and the stonework had been broken into, but there were no signs of any workmen at the moment of our visit. If, in fact, there had not been blue smoke curling up from the chimneys, I would have doubted anyone at all resided in the place. As I stood gawking at the manor house, Holmes was walking slowly up and down the wild lawn, examining the outsides of the windows, when he said,
"This, I take it, is the room in which you used to sleep, the center, your sister's, and the one next to the main building to Dr. Roylott's chamber."
"Exactly so. But I am now sleeping in the middle one."
"Pending the alterations, as I understand. There does not seem to be any pressing need for repairs at that end of the wall."
"There were none. I believe that it was an excuse to move me from my room."
"Ah, that is suggestive. Now, on the other side of this wing runs the corridor from which these three rooms open. Are there windows in it?"
"Yes, but very small ones. Too narrow for anyone to pass through."
"And as you both locked your doors at night, your rooms were unapproachable from that side. Now, would you have the kindness to go into your room and bar your shutters?"
"Absolutely, Mr. Holmes."
"Watson, pray help me in attempting to pry these shutters open." "My theory certainly presents some difficulties. No one could pass with these bolted. Well, we shall see if the interior throws any light upon the matter."
"All of our chambers open to this corridor. The second room is the room in which I stay."
"Of course. Let us have a look."
"A small room, though I must say an impressive fireplace."
"Yes, it does get rather cold on the winter nights. What do you make of it, Mr. Holmes?"
"Hmm?"
"Mr. Holmes?"
Where, Miss Stoner, does that bell pull adjacent to the bed communicate with?"
"It goes to the housekeeper's room."
"It looks newer than the other things."
"Yes, it was only put there a couple of years ago."
"Your sister asked for it, I suppose?"
"No, I never heard of her using it. We always got what we wanted ourselves. She often complained of it swinging into her while she slept."
"Indeed. It seems unnecessary to put so nice a bell pull there. You will excuse me for a few moments while I satisfy myself as to this floor. Solid as anything, Watson. Would you ring the bell for me?"
"Why, yes. Oh, it's a dummy."
"How strange. Allow me, Watson."
"Won't it ring?"
No. It's not even attached to a wire. This is very interesting. You can see now that it is fastened to a hook just above where the little opening for the ventilator is. Was it done about the same time as the bell rope?"
Yes, there were several little changes carried out about that time.
They seem to have been of a most interesting character. Dummy bell ropes and ventilators which do not ventilate. With your permission, Miss Stoner, we shall now carry our researchers into Dr. Roylott's room.
Yes, this way.
Oh. A man of few comforts, your stepfather. I've rarely seen a more uncomfortable bed or deflated armchair. What's in the safe, then?
My stepfather's business papers.
Oh, so you have seen inside, then?
Only once, some years ago. I remember that it was full of papers.
There isn't a cat in it, for example?
No. What a strange idea.
Well, look at this. For what else would there be a saucer of milk upon the safe?
No, we don't keep a cat. But there is a cheetah and a baboon.
Ah, yes, of course. Well, a cheetah is just a big cat. And yet a saucer of milk does not go very far in satisfying its wants. Watson, do remove yourself from that chair.
Of course, Holmes. Must you look at it through your lens?
Yes, thank you. Ah, that is quite settled. Hello. Here is something interesting. What do you make of that, Watson?
It's a common enough dog leash, but I don't know why it should be tied and curled as it is.
That is not quite so common, is it? Ah, me. It's a wicked world. And when a clever man turns his brains to crime, it is the worst of all. I think that I have seen enough now, Miss Stoner. It is essential that you follow my advice in every respect.
I most certainly shall do so.
The matter is too serious for any hesitation. Your life may depend upon your compliance.
I assure you that I am in your hands.
In the first place, both my friend and I must spend the night in your room.
Beg Sir! Pardon, Holmes?
Yes, it must be so. Let me explain. I believe that is the village inn over there.
Yes, that is the Crown.
Very good. Your windows would be visible from there.
Certainly.
You must confine yourself to your room on pretense of a headache when your stepfather comes back. When you hear him retire for the night, open the shutters of your window, put your lamp there as a signal to us, and withdraw quietly with everything which you are likely to want into the room which he used to occupy. I have no doubt that, in spite of the repairs, you could manage there for one night.
Oh, yes, easily.
The rest you will leave in our hands.
But what will you do?
We shall spend the night in your room, and we shall investigate the cause of this noise which has disturbed you. And now, Miss Stoner, we must leave you. If Dr. Roylott returns and sees us, our journey would be in vain. Goodbye, and be brave. If you will do what I have told you, you may rest assured that we shall soon drive away the dangers that threaten you.
Thank you, Mr. Holmes.
Remember to hang the lamp. Good day, Miss Stoner.
Goodbye.
Perhaps you have lost something and cannot find it. Perhaps you suspect someone but have no proof. Perhaps there exists no mystery in your life, but you are in dire need of diversion. The solution awaits you at Baker Street West, a Victorian London neighborhood straight from the tales of Sherlock Holmes, located in historic Jackson, California. Bring your close friends, bring your family, and bring your problem for an entertaining consultation with the world's first consulting detective, Mr. Sherlock Holmes, and of course, Dr. John Watson. Held in Baker Street West's remarkable recreation of 221B Baker Street. Lack a problem? No worries. A problem can be created for you. The fee for consultations begins at $50 and may include Mrs. Hudson's famous tea and refreshments. Fees benefit Baker Street West, a non-profit arts organization. To arrange for your consultation, please message Mrs. Hudson at info@bakerstreetwest.com or telephone 209-223-2215. Baker Street West, where the game is always afoot.
Do you know, Watson, I had some scruples as to taking you tonight. There is a distinct element of danger.
Can I be of assistance?
Your presence may be invaluable.
Then I shall certainly come.
It is very kind of you.
You speak of danger. You've evidently seen more in these rooms than was visible to me.
No, but I fancy I may have deduced a little more. I imagine you saw all that I did.
I saw nothing remarkable, save the bell rope. And what purpose that could answer is more than I can imagine.
You saw the ventilator, too?
It was so small, even a rat could hardly pass through.
I knew that we should find a ventilator before we ever came to Stoke Moran.
My dear Holmes, really?
Oh, yes, I did. You remember in her statement, she said her sister could smell Dr. Roylott's cigar. That suggested at once that there must be a communication between the two rooms. It could only be a small one, or it would have been remarked upon at the coroner's inquiry. I deduced a ventilator.
But what harm can there be in that?
Well, there is at least a curious coincidence of dates. A ventilator is made, a cord is hung, and a lady who sleeps in the bed dies. Does that not strike you?
I cannot as yet see any connection.
Did you observe anything very peculiar about that bed?
No.
It was clamped to the floor. Did you ever see a bed fastened like that before?
I cannot say that I have.
The lady could not move her bed. It must always be in the same relative position to the ventilator and to the rope, as we may call it, since it was clearly never meant for a bell pull.
Holmes, I seem to see dimly what you are hinting at. We are only just in time to prevent some subtle and horrible crime.
Subtle enough, and horrible enough. When a doctor does go wrong, he is the first of criminals. He has nerve, and he has knowledge. We shall have horrors enough before the night is over. Now, pass me my pipe, won't you, Watson? These are the bounds of the estate. We must proceed with the utmost caution. Watson, keep your wits about you. I shall need your eyes and ears.
My God, Holmes, did you see that?
Quiet, Watson. It could be... yes, it is a nice household. That would be the baboon.
At least not the cheetah.
Yes. Now through the window and into the room. Now, here we are, Watson. The least sound would be fatal to our plans.
Yes.
We must sit without light. He would see it through the ventilator. Do not go to sleep. Your very life may depend upon it. I shall have my cane, but have your pistol ready in case we should need it. I will sit on the side of the bed, and you in that chair.
Holmes?
You see it, Watson? Do you see it?
It is too dim.
There it goes. Up the bell pull again.
Oh, no! What can it mean?
It means that it is all over. And perhaps it is for the best. Take your pistol. We shall enter Dr. Roylott's room. Aid me to light this lamp.
Here we are, shall we?
Let us knock first. Ready your pistol, Watson. In we go.
Good Lord. Is the man dead? And what is that about his head?
The band. The speckled band.
Let me take his pulse. Ah, it moves!
Watson, back away! That is no band. It is a swamp adder. The deadliest snake in all of India. He's died within 10 seconds of being bitten.
Good Lord, what an end, Holmes. What an end.
Hand me that dog leash, Watson. Let us thrust this creature back into its den. We can then remove Miss Stoner to some place of shelter and let the country police know what has happened.
Right.
Violence does, in truth, recoil upon the violent. Goodbye, Dr. Roylott.
Ah, it is good to be home. What an astonishing case, Holmes, but I truly cannot see how you came to your conclusions.
In fact, at the beginning, I had come to an entirely erroneous conclusion, which shows, my dear Watson, how dangerous it always is to reason from insufficient data. The presence of the travelers and the use of the word band, along with our cabbie's mention of the spotty handkerchiefs, was sufficient to put me upon an entirely wrong scent. My attention was drawn to this ventilator and the bell rope. The discovery that this was a dummy and that the bed was clamped to the floor gave rise to the suspicion that the rope was there for a bridge for something passing through the hole. The idea of a snake instantly occurred to me. Coupled with my knowledge that the doctor was furnished with a supply of creatures from India, I felt that I was probably on the right track. The idea of using a form of poison which could not be discovered by any chemical test was just such a one as would occur to a clever and ruthless man with a doctor's training. Then I thought of the whistle.
And what of it, Holmes?
Why, Watson, Dr. Roylott must recall the snake. He had trained it, probably by the use of milk, which we saw, to return to him when he summoned. He would put it through this ventilator at the hour that he thought would best to crawl down the rope to the bed. It might or might not bite the occupant. Perhaps she might escape every night for a week, but sooner or later she must fall victim. Inspection of this chair showed me that he had been in the habit of standing on it in order to access the ventilator. The sight of the safe, the saucer of milk, and the leash were enough to dispel any doubts. The metallic clang heard by Miss Stoner was obviously caused by her stepfather closing the safe upon its terrible occupant. Last night, as we waited, when I heard the creature hiss, I instantly lit the light and attacked it, driving it through the ventilator. This caused it to turn upon its master at the other side. Some of the blows of my cane must have roused its snakish temper, and it flew upon the first person it saw.
And that person, of course, was the bad doctor.
Of course. In this way, I am no doubt indirectly responsible for Dr. Grimsby Roylott's death, and I cannot say that it is likely to weigh very heavily upon my conscience. And now, Watson, shall we have a smoke? It's been enough excitement for 1 week. I do think.
I could not agree more.
The Baker Street Players presentation of The Speckled Band by Arthur Conan Doyle was adapted by Connor Broderick, using the voice talents of Joe Sveck as Dr. John Watson, Brad Losvald as Sherlock Holmes, Emily Cannon Brown as Helen Stoner, Maya McHenry as Julia Stoner, Brad Barnard as Dr. Grimsby Roylott, and Beth Barnard as Mrs. Hudson. The Foley crew is Michaela Balash, Deborah Brown, and Amanda Reese. Sound technician and sound editing by Roger Fugere. Original score created by Dave Vasquez, and additional music by Norm and Pam Ivy of Sequoia.
If you enjoy Baker Street West podcasts, please do consider making a donation right here on the Baker Street West website. Baker Street West is a non-profit arts organization offering performing arts, educational opportunities, and lively experiences to foster interest in Victorian culture and the literature of Sir Arthur Conan Doyle and others of the period. Your support helps us ensure we can keep doing what we do to keep the game afoot at Baker Street West. Just scroll down to the bottom of the Baker Street West homepage and click the donate button. And thank you. Thank you.